This piece was brought to you by Roberta's, robertaspizza.com.
I'm a backer from Italy, and I'm eating spaghetti, and I'm drinking a wine out of a can, Mamma Mia. You know, they actually say that in Italy. Welcome to Life's a Banquet, the show about the highs and lows of all things edible, spreadable, and pourable, with your host, Zara Tangora, and...
me, Nicole. Sorry, I thought you were going to say me.
Cat-like reflexes on Nicole.
Oh, and Nicole Bailey. So, guys, Brent has left the building. Goodbye. We will miss you. Avita Zay. But, Nicole, welcome back to the show, co-hostess with the mostest.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
What's popping?
Do they really say Mamma Mia in Italy?
Yeah. Huh, okay. They say Mamma Mia, and they also say, anytime they're like, instead of saying, oh, wow, they say, oh, Madonna. Like, oh, Madonna. Madonna.
Okay, like the saint.
Yeah, the queen of the night, Madonna.
Right.
No, or, like Madonna, whatever. Leon? What's her real last name? Chick Leon?
I don't know.
Okay, well, anyway, that's enough about Italy. Italy schmittily, that's what I say. What have you been doing?
I've just been working, basically, kind of boring, and going to the beach the last gasp of summer.
Ooh, grassland, catching fish, spotting whales?
Nope, just sunbathing.
Ooh, and nude?
Sure, yeah.
Ooh, sexy time at the beach. Yum. Mm-hmm. Guess my invitation got lost in the mail.
Yeah, it did.
I've been in Italy for the past 3 weeks.
I know.
It's been hard for you?
Yeah, I've just been... I mean, I sent you a message in a bottle. I guess it didn't...
It did not
that
arrive.
That was your invitation.
I was staying inland, though.
Oh. Yeah. I guess I should have checked that out before I sent it.
So what's going on? What have you eaten, drank, kind of weird snacks you've been making at home?
Nothing really that interesting. Especially not probably compared to actual Italian food from Italy.
Yeah.
I ate like a frozen pizza.
That's Italian.
Italian, yeah. It was a cauliflower crust pizza, so like gluten-free, low carb.
Very hip, very trendy, very now. It's all the rage in Rome. The streets of Rome are teeming with crispy cauliflower crust.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
Yeah, they're everywhere. Amazing. Well, I had some really good food experiences. I was cooking while I was there. Right. I burned my hand. Look at this disgusting menagerie.
Dude, that's gross.
I know.
Cover that.
It's like a peely scab. It's at like phase. It's at the phase of a burn where I just look like an elderly person that has a growth,
ew.
Right?
Yeah,
like a weird
or
cancer.
Like, I just saw the second It movie, and there's a moment where an older woman like moves her shirt around, and there's like a growth on her chest that looks exactly like that.
Really?
Burn.
What was the growth? Was she becoming an It?
She is like. I mean, I don't want to spoil anything. That scene is actually in the preview, so I haven't said anything too much. But
okay.
She's not a good gal. You know, look out for her moments after that scene.
Are there more It's than one?
No.
Okay. Still just one It.
But they can, like, control stuff.
You know, just to take a left turn for a second, I was really disappointed in the first remake of It because I had hoped it to be a little bit more, like, realistic and kind of, like, John Wayne Gacy-ish instead of, like magic. And I wish they had kind of taken a turn with it where It was actually more like a real dude who, like, dressed as a clown and lived down the block.
I don't know. I like the supernatural element.
You did?
Yeah. And I actually think that the first one was better than the second one ended up being.
Yeah.
Sadly. But what can we do?
Literally nothing. I was hoping to watch a play. So I had two bad flying experiences.
Uh-oh.
My first one was on my way out. I don't know if I texted you. I texted basically everyone else I knew. Some people cared a lot. Others...
I don't think you did.
Not at all. I sat on the tarmac for 6.5 hours.
Whoa. I thought there was like a law where you can't sit on the tarmac for more than like 2 hours.
It's 4, but at like 5 hours, they were like, you can get off the plane if you want, but like, good luck getting your luggage ever. Thanks. Hashtag American Airlines. Give me a business class seat next time, yo.
What, were you flying out of LaGuardia? Worst airport in America?
No, I was flying out of JFK.
Huh.
Then, on my way back, because I canceled my return ticket a couple times to cool. extend my trip because it was so fun, I flew Norwegian Airlines.
Sure, sounds nice.
Not as nice as it sounds. A lot of bitchy Nordic people. Huh. And also teeny tiny seats. Wait, there's more. No TVs!
Well, I feel like TVs, I don't know. I don't expect them to be there.
I just was like David Putty, like staring at the wall. Do you ever see that episode of Seinfeld where him and Elaine come back from Europe and they break up on the plane like four times? He's staring at the seat. She's like, are you just going to sit there and stare at the seat? That was me for 10 hours. But aside from that, I really like ate and drank some really good stuff. I was in Rome for a total of like 18 hours on the tail end of my trip. Mm-hmm. And I got there and I like ran to the Colosseum like a freak.
Haven't you been there before?
Yeah. Oh, okay. But it's still fun. I mean, it's a freaking Colosseum. It's like the craziest thing. Like, yeah, if you're going to see a tourist attraction, it's like...
I never have left North America, so the closest I have is the Pepsi Coliseum in Indianapolis, which is where the hockey teams play and where I learned how to ice skate.
That's amazing. What, any Roman connection there?
I mean, it's called the Coliseum, so, like, there must be. I mean, it's probably, like, the first Roman structure in the United States or something.
Well, that sounds amazing. So, yeah, I ran to the Coliseum, and then I, like, got some cocktails back across the river. Then I went to dinner, ate a giant plate of mortadella at Rascioli, which is this, like, great restaurant in Rome. Giant plate of mortadella, bread basket, a pasta, rigatoni alla Gricia with their house-made guanciale. Mm. Then I ran and got a double scoop of pistachio gelato.
You're, like, running constantly.
I'm, like, just... I'm, like, what's the road runner and, like, the feet just keep going and there's like dust everywhere. That's me. I'm dusting it all over.
Oh, room. Because you only had 18 hours. You were like, bam, bam.
Yeah, I was like, I ate well when I was there, but I was kind of working like the rest of the time. So it wasn't like a, you know, culinary experience for me so much as it was for everyone around me. Oh my God, my papers. No, my life. How will I do this? I've been reading from a paper this whole time. So then the next morning, I wake up at 6 a.m. and go get, like, pastries from this, like, little place in the Jewish quarter that makes, like, this thick ricotta pastry with cherry jam. Go back to the Colosseum in Palatine Hill.
You love it there.
Pizza for breakfast from two different places. Then I go back to my hotel. I take a shower. I go to the Vatican. Then I go to lunch and I eat more bread, a giant salad of string beans and tuna, and then a giant plate of ravioli, then another double scoop of pistachio gelato from the same place, and then I'm like, I need to get the fuck out of Rome.
How did you have to wait in line at the Vatican?
I didn't actually go into the Basilica. I just went and looked at it, because there usually is quite a long line.
Right. So that's all I know about Italy.
that the Vatican is quite popular?
Uh-huh.
That the Pope lives there?
Everyone's always like, then I waited in line.
There's a lot of lines. You got to go early to things if you want. Listen, you heard it here first. If you want to beat the lines anywhere in Italy... wake up early.
Or in the world.
Yeah, that's possibly true. Nicole, what are we going to talk about today?
So the topic is the 90s, which I wholeheartedly agreed to and thought nothing more of until I started researching it. And then I was like, what the hell? Like, the food in the 90s, as I texted you, could be its own independent freestanding podcast that goes on for years. So
totally.
I was torn. I had this whole, like, idea of talking about, like, all the stuff that was going on in, like, the New York restaurant scene and, like, how, like, Keith McNally and Danny Meyer, who are both longtime fans of this podcast, right?
Yes, they're sponsors.
doing that whole thing and, like, Kermit Lynch and Neil Rosenthal and Natural Wine and then, like, the food critics and just, like, everything that was happening. And then I was like, wait, what does everyone actually want to hear about 90s food related? It's just the food trends. That's all anybody wants. Yeah. It's like the BuzzFeed article. It's like, what was the trendy food in the 90s? So that is what we are going to focus on. Although if anyone wants to start that other podcast with me, give me a call.
Yeah. Call her.
So I'm basically just going to go through the food trends of the 90s. Most of this is from an article in Food and Wine magazine. And some of the stuff that they say is controversial. But
how so?
You'll see.
Oh, God.
So I'm just going to go through the trends, give a little bit of fun facts about each one, and then...
Do tell.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Amazing. I'm sitting here slowly sipping a clearly Canadian.
Which is not on my food trend list. Whoops. Perfect. although I was a huge fan of that in high school.
Yeah.
And I went on a trip to Canada, and I thought that for some reason it would be much more affordable in Canada. But it was the same price.
And you're like, clearly, it's Canadian.
I was only 12. What do you want from me? Okay, so I'm just going to start. These are in no particular order.
Okay, good.
That I could ascertain. Oh. So we're going to start off with molten chocolate cake.
Oh! Yes!
So technically, this was actually invented by Jean-Georges von Richten. He's like a very important famous person.
Yes, I never knew how to pronounce his last name.
Great.
Matt, do we know how to pronounce Jean-Georges' last name?
Absolutely not.
Okay, great. Perfect.
Great. I'm sorry, everyone that does know how to pronounce that, which is everyone else. He, according to Food and Wine magazine, which I thought was pretty funny, they said he gave diners at some of the world's fanciest restaurants the confidence to publicly indulge in raw batter.
Ooh, raw batter is the two sexiest words you could put together. It's like the most pornographic you can get without like watching people fuck.
Besides baby batter.
Oh yeah, batter in general is very sexual.
And according to Food and Wine magazine, 1991 is actually when molten chocolate cake really took off, whatever that means. And it was when it was served at a restaurant called Jojo, and it was called the Chocolate Valrhona Cake, which everyone then copied, and it finally reached the pinnacle of its popularity when it was put on the Chili's menu in 1998.
Oh, wow.
Where it still remains today.
It was left to die
on
the Chili's menu.
Chili's is probably one of the most important restaurants that we have in America. But,
I'm not going to fucking lie to you. 2-for-1 margs and some, like, chili con queso dip. Sign me up.
Yeah. It's also, their queso dip is all you can eat, like, endless, bottomless. So it's a bad idea, but...
But
is it?
A moment on the lips, a lifetime on the hips. Am I right, Chili's lovers?
Also, they have a good black bean burger. But anyway, moving on. The next one is a food that I have always disliked. Sun-dried tomatoes.
Oh, yeah!
Food and Wine argues that sun-dried tomatoes were the sriracha of the 90s.
Less spicy. And also they, red.
They also contribute, or they attribute the demise of sun-dried tomatoes to, so basically when they like went wild and they were everywhere, the demand increase led to a lack of quality control. So basically farmers who were actually like drying their tomatoes in the California sun stopped doing that. And they started using food dehydrators.
Oh my God, are you serious?
Yes, I'm not. You can't make this shit up. And so the food dehydrator way, apparently, according to Food and Wine magazine, decreased the quality and the intensity of flavor, and also just made for wide variances in, like, what the quality was. But nothing was, like, labeled as really sun-dried or dehydrated. Sure. So when you went to the store, you pick up a jar of them, right? I don't know. And then you couldn't tell if it was going to be, like, good or bad. And that's why, according to Food and Wine, that the popularity declined. Right. I say that it declined because they are gross.
You know what? I'm a tomato enthusiast. I love tomatoes so much. Sun-dried tomatoes can suck an egg.
I think it's just like the, this has been covered many times by many people. We don't need to go into it, but I'm not a fan.
It's all skin, essentially.
It's a raisin.
Yeah, and especially when people now are starting to take to drying them on, like, the hood of their car instead of in the natural suns of... These are field-dried. Okay, that's... Yes, I remember sun-dried tomato everything, especially, like, sun-dried tomato pesto is very popular in my home. Sun-dried tomato wraps.
People would put it in a sandwich.
Oh, yeah. They were putting it everywhere.
Everywhere. Everywhere. Yeah, so moving on to frozen coffee drinks.
Oh.
So, I don't know if everyone knows this, but in 1992, a place called Coffee Connection, owned by George Howell, started selling Frappuccinos from that store. They became very, very popular. And then in 1994, Dunkin' Donuts invented the Coolada, which is kind of like their flavored version of frozen coffee. And then in 95, Starbucks launched their Frappuccino. So even though everyone thinks of Starbucks as like the Frappuccino place, it was really George Howell who invented, I mean, he didn't invent it because it's sort of like a combination of like a frappe that existed forever. But this particular thing and calling it a Frappuccino actually was invented by George Howell.
So where is George Howell on the payroll now? What happened to him?
So George Howell is actually a very well-known and he's doing fine coffee guy. He's got his own thing going on. He's doing totally fine.
We don't need to worry about him.
Don't worry about him.
Okay. Good for you, Georgie H. You did it. You did the damn thing.
Next on the list is Chinese chicken salad.
Oh my God. I have to be honest, Chinese chicken salad is my probably number one favorite food. I could live on it for the rest of my life until all my teeth fell out and my hair went gray from only eating iceberg lettuce.
Yeah. So this is where we get into a little bit of controversy.
Oh.
It's not really controversy, but the Chinese chicken salad was not invented in the 90s. It was probably invented in like the 60s.
Yeah.
And then sort of like got more popular slowly around the 70s and 80s. And then what happened was Wolfgang Puck started serving it at one of his restaurants. I can't remember which one because I only started to write down the first one letter of it.
What is it? What's the first letter?
It's like Chinois or something?
Okay.
Is that one of his restaurants?
I don't know.
God, I'm going to be mispronouncing so many important, I'm just a layperson, okay? Sorry. Wolfgang Puck, forgive me.
Sorry, Wolfie.
But yeah, so Wolfgang Puck basically is sort of credited with popularizing it to the point of it getting like on a Wendy's menu.
Okay.
But he didn't invent it and doesn't claim to, but that's just...
My favorite one is that... Do you ever go to Houston's or Hillstone restaurants?
Yes, I've been to Houston's.
They have, like, the most delicious Chinese chicken salad.
Really?
Oh, my God.
I would never order a Chinese chicken salad. I just don't want to eat orange segments in
They don't have orange segments in this one.
Oh, I thought that was one of, like, the...
It's a core tenet of the average Asian chicken salad, but this one goes a little bit over. It's okay. A little avant-garde. They have... Actually, it mixes a little bit of Mexican flair in because they have tortilla strips in it, but it's still Asian. It's mad good.
Huh.
Yeah.
Like a fusion.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yes. It's delicious.
Great. Moving on is fat-free snacks.
Oh, yes.
So probably one of the most well-known snack was the Snackwell's Devil Food cookie that was like, do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, of course.
So that debuted in 1992. It sold out within months of the debut, and superfans, according to the Chicago Tribune, would stalk the delivery trucks in order to get them at the grocery store before they were on the shelves.
Oh my God.
So popular.
That's crazy.
I know.
That was very popular in my house because my dad always kind of had like a weight problem. And when there was like fat free came out, it was like all the rage. And
yeah.
Like he would eat like, you know, a case of Snackwells.
Yeah. And I mean,
still has the same calories.
It took over the world. Yeah, yeah. But calories weren't a thing then. Like, you know, there were fat free Fig Newtons. Everything was fat free. And then that eventually led to the fat-free potato chip with Olestra.
Anal leakage.
Which is 1998. Yeah, so basically, when it first came out, everyone was like, you can eat potato chips without the guilt.
Sure.
And then when everyone had their problem with the loose stools, the FDA actually had to put that information on the packaging. Like, it actually says this product may cause loose stools on Olestra products. And that's surprisingly not when the popularity waned.
Yeah. I remember watching, like, in the late 90s when Wow Chips first came out, Matt Lauer, America's Sweetheart, was interviewing.
Dethroned.
He was interviewing, like, the person behind them, and he's like, I have to be honest with you. I am very concerned about this product. I'm reading here, it says, people who eat Wow Chips are recommended to bring an extra pair of work pants with them when they go to work every day. So it said, like, bring extra pants to work if you're going to eat Wow Chips.
Well, I'm sure Matt Lauer already did that since he had that creepy thing that would just close the office door and lock it behind you from the button behind his
full
desk.
Full of work pants and Wow Chips. Well, that's amazing. Those are some crazy food. Do you have more?
I have more.
Go. Let's hear them.
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm going to skip this one because it's boring. So let's move on to Zima.
Oh, clear.
So in 1993, Zima, a beer alternative, appeared magically.
Out of nowhere.
Which, of course, then paved the way for, like, Smirnoff Ice, Bacardi Breezes, Mike's Hard Lemonade. And what I was really a fan of in, like, college was the Jack Daniel's punch thing.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you remember those.
Yeah, I do.
They were great.
Yeah.
Probably not, but in my memory. But I thought that this was really interesting. So the Washington Post reported in 1995, 2 years after they had come out, that youth officials, I don't know what a youth official is, but I thought that was really funny. I'm like, what's a youth official? We don't know.
Just like a youth with like a badge and like a pair of like horn rim glasses.
They were in Maryland and 9 other states. They complained that because Zima is colorless and odorless, that it wouldn't be able to be detected on a breathalyzer. At which point, Coors had to like write many letters to police chiefs and school superintendents debunking this.
Whoa.
And they were like, this is going to make teens so you can't smell the breathalyzer on their breath and like it won't be able to be detected. And I just thought that was funny because vodka is also colorless and odorless.
Yeah, that's why they made vodka so you can go back to work and no one will know that you're exactly. hammered until you throw up on your boss.
But that's why you brought your extra work pants.
That's amazing.
Okay, I'm going to... let's see. There's another one. Oh, okay. So I have two more.
Okay.
The first one is basically like, I wasn't really sure what to call it, but Food and Wine kind of called it lunchbox treats. But
yeah.
It's also kind of like lunchbox treats and like kid foods.
Yeah, yeah.
So like there was already like a ton of marketing for kids foods in the 80s, obviously, but the 90s just like really ramped everything up and it was just like, everything was just like full of sugar and just like no holds barred.
Oh, yeah.
Because we only care about fat in the 90s, not sugar.
Yeah.
But there were... Shark Bites, do you remember those?
Yes, and there was like white sharks.
The one
in there.
White shark, yeah.
Delicious.
Dunkaroos.
Favorite.
Gushers.
Loved them.
Squeeze-Its.
Yep. Squeezable yogurt.
Right, Go-Gurt.
Go-Gurt.
Yeah.
Squeeze-It was the juice thing, though.
Squeeze-It was like the basically just like sugar water in a plastic container.
Loved it.
There was Fruit by the Foot. Toaster Strudel, which came with, each strudel came with its own individual icing packet.
I used to put two icings on one, and then at the end, I'd be like, I have a couple with no icing. It would suck.
There were Bagel Bites.
Uh-huh.
And just like everything was kind of marketed to kids in this weird way. But I was really a big fan of Bagel Bites.
Oh, loved them.
I used to make Bagel Bites and then put leftover Taco Bell mild sauce that was in our fridge on them.
Hell yeah. That's the fucking move. That's life amazing. Well, let's take a quick break and then when we... Okay. Go ahead. Please. No, by all means.
This is the most important one.
I'm sorry. We're being sponsored today by Bagel Bites. I just wanted to get to the point.
Okay. I'll make this fast.
Okay.
So Crystal Pepsi.
Oh, everything clear.
Yeah.
So loved Crystal Pepsi.
I didn't know this until today. So 1992 is when it came out. They tested it in Denver. They widely released it in 1993, but allegedly Coca-Cola found out about it and launched a kamikaze mission to take down Clear Pepsi by launching their own drink that they knew was going to be bad. So they basically made Crystal Clear Tab, which I never knew about.
I knew about that, yeah.
I didn't know about that. And they knew it was... So basically their whole goal was like, Tab is a diet drink. So they wanted to confuse the market. They wanted people to think that Crystal Clear Pepsi was... always diet, and they wanted people to think they're like, Tab's a woman's drink, so we want people to associate Crystal Clear Pepsi with women.
Oh my
which
god,
means men can't drink it because in the 90s, sexism was like totally fine.
That's genius,
I know. And then, they also what did they say? They just basically also it tasted bad on purpose, like they were like they wanted to confuse the market and take them down, but also like by launching a product they knew was bad. But the win is that like Tab went away very soon because it was gross.
Yeah.
But the Coca-Cola as a brand wasn't impacted because people didn't associate Tab with like Coca-Cola.
Sure.
And so...
But Crystal Clear Pepsi was.
Also went away. Yeah, Crystal Clear Pepsi went away like a couple of months after that, and that was the end. And
that's amazing.
Yeah.
I always wondered why. That's
corporate
so...
kamikaze.
Whoa.
I think that, you know, it's interesting.
That's absolutely fascinating. In the 90s when everything was clear. Clearly Canadian.
Yep.
Orbits with the bubbles in it.
Oh,
Crystal
yeah.
Clear Amoco Ultimate, clear gas. They're like, you can't see the fucking gas in your car, but like, it's gonna be clear. And they had the like Van Halen song, right now.
Yes,
the moment. I don't know if that was for Pepsi or gas, but they're
For Pepsi.
They're interchangeable.
Exactly.
Okay, let's take a break. We're brought to you by Amoco, Pepsi, everything clear, oil,
sun-dried tomatoes.
Bye.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's. A super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Hi, we're back. So, a couple of little things that I wanted to bring up about just like 90s foods that I remember. Little Hug Quarter Waters. You know those little quarter waters?
No.
They were called Little Hugs, and they're a quarter. So, you call them like Little Hug Quarter Waters.
Are you saying this in a Long Island accent so I can't?
Little Hugs Quarter Waters.
Quarter
Water. They were really just called Little Hug Waters,
quarter
but they were quarters.
Waters.
Yeah,
because
they
say
cost
it.
A quarter. Little Hug Quarter Waters.
With the foil top.
Yeah. There's a Cannibal Ox song about it, too. Smucker's Uncrustables, the sandwiches, the PB&J sandwiches that came made up.
Was
and
that
they
the
had
90s?
Yeah. Right. Mad 90s. Orbit's Bubble Drink, French Toast Crunch.
Yuck.
Handy Snacks.
Very good.
Dude, this is the one that I want to mention the most because I had forgotten about this and I loved this. Kudos. Do you remember those? They were like kind of like granola candy
fake
bars.
Granola bars, but they were just
they
candy
were
bars.
Candy. They were like oats. Snickers, M&Ms. They had a thick layer of chocolate on the bottom. That was the shit. Butterfinger BBs.
Oh, right. Those were important.
Yeah. A bubble beeper. And it was like a beeper shaped pack of bubble gum that had like messages like, call me back.
I do remember those.
Fruit stripe gum. And as you mentioned, Dunkaroos. I today want to talk to you about maybe the most important food and drink product from the 90s,
yes.
Or one of them at least, Snapple.
Yes.
So, as we all remember, or some of us maybe don't because you're too young, little babies listening to the show, a little bunch of baby Draculas, Snapple used to have facts under the lid. So I'm going to read you, instead of doing a joke today like I normally do, I'm going to read you a couple Snapple facts, some
Wait,
of my favorites.
Should we tell people what Snapple is? What if they don't know?
Oh, that's true. They don't even make it anymore. I tried to find it.
No, they do.
They do.
But some the other day.
Oh, okay. Snapple was a delicious beverage. They had them in all flavors. It was built on an iced tea brand of all kind of flavors, but they had fruit juices, mango madness, apples.
Kiwi strawberry.
Ooh, kiwi strawberry.
Big 90s ziti. Flavor.
Strawberry kiwi big ziti. Ghost face. Anyway, so they used to have facts under the lids, and here's some of my favorites. Flamingos turn pink from eating shrimp.
That's true.
That's fucking crazy. What if they didn't? They'd just be white? What if they're vegetarian? What if they're allergic to shrimp?
They would die.
The only food that doesn't spoil is honey. This one, obviously, this next one I hate. Frogs can't swallow with their eyes open.
Why did you bring up frogs?
It just came up and I was like, that is an interesting fact. Americans, on average, eat 18 acres of pizza every day. And that was in the 90s, so by now it's probably at least...
Every day?
100 acres, yeah. And a 1 minute kiss burns 26 calories. Please, anybody who wants to kiss me, call me. And call Nicole also. Call us.
Call me first.
Okay, call her and then me.
Thanks.
Okay, so in at a health food store in 1972, this guy, Arnold Greenberg, was joined by two of his friends, Leonard Marsh and Hyman Golden. And they owned a window washing business. Should mention I got all my information on this from Mashable. They partnered with Greenberg to create unadulterated food products. And they were like... But it was like a health food store, basically. And their first product they wanted to make was like a fizzy apple juice that they were going to like bottle ferment. Very ahead of the time. PetNat, if you will.
In fact.
A PetNat. They were working with Kermit Lynch to make the first PetNat apple juice. Anyway, so they didn't end up making that. But like what was happening in the bottle was like it was a snappy apple. So they decided they wanted to call it Snapple. Now, a Texas company had the trademark to the name Snapple, and they bought the name for $500.
Which in the 90s was like
in 90s,
$600.
Yeah, it was $600. So they bottled it hot, so they didn't have to put preservatives in it, which, like, you know, Snapple is one of the first people to put all natural, which is such a 90s kind of fluff filler thing. Like, we now know all natural basically means nothing. It's a nothing terminology.
Wait, can I ask a question? So the first Snapple was a sparkling apple juice?
Yeah, but they never went with that. But that's why it's called Snapple.
That's why it's called that.
But they never like ended up making it.
But they still decided to go forward with a beverage company.
Exactly. So they decided to go to iced tea and they were just like, you know, making it hot so they didn't have to put any preservatives.
Got it.
Now, this is what I feel like is the most interesting part of this story. And the thing that, like, I remember most, and I watched a bunch of these commercials earlier today, was Wendy Kaufman, the Snapple lady.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Do you remember her?
Yeah, she was just, like, a lady on staff, and she worked at a desk job there.
Exactly. So she had kind of gotten into the company on the ground level in, like, the very early 90s, and I was researching on, and she's very open about this. She had a terrible cocaine problem from like the year 1980 until 1991 when she first was at Snapple.
Whoa.
I was watching her on Oprah today, and
is
she
that
said,
longer than Stevie Nicks?
That's a pretty long time to be like terribly into cocaine. I mean, she didn't dabble. She's like saying today, she's like, if I pushed on my cheek, like right under my eye, blood would squirt out of my nose.
Oh.
The Snapple lady. Okay.
I am shocked.
I know, but I really also like appreciated her candidness about it because she was like, I've always been overweight. I was like searching for something and I became an addict. And she was like, working at Snapple was the thing that really helped her like conquer her addiction, which I thought was really incredible. So she started working there in 1981. Also, this is a Long Island business, may I say.
Hmm.
And she's from Long Island, I think, still works there. The company's headquarters were in Valley Stream, Long Island, for all you
Islanders.
She still
works there, present day?
No, she still lives in Long Island.
Okay.
So the ad agency at the time who was doing Snapple's PR was like, the most popular women at the time were like Oprah and like Rosie O'Donnell. And they're like, women who are going to buy this product don't necessarily want like a supermodel to be a spokeswoman or just celebrities like straight out there. Like, let's go kind of fringe. Let's use this woman who is relatable to other women out there in America as the spokeswoman. And so for anyone who doesn't remember, she would read. So she was getting all this fan mail and she was compassionate to getting the fan mail because she had written like Greg Brady fan mail. She was a huge fan of the Brady Bunch. So she was getting all this fan mail and she's like,
so heartwarming.
Yeah. She's like, I felt compelled to read it because like I wrote to him and like, I just wanted like someone who would read it. So she started collecting all these letters and managing it. And then they put her on the air and what they would do is she'd like read the letter like, hey Wendy, like I work in a pet store and like my snakes like love Snapple. And they'd be like, how much do they love Snapple? And then they'd be like, let's find out. And so like some random people would bring like 10 cases of Snapple and try to like make a snake drink it. And that would be the commercial.
Yes.
Yeah. And it was pretty amazing. And she
was
said,
that real or were their snakes didn't actually do that on a
commercial? I mean, I didn't, there was one with like a dog today that I saw that would bark every time it heard like a Snapple being opened. There was some kid who was in detention. He's like, they like delivered all the Snapple to the detention. There was a guy who like weightlifted like 700 pounds of Snapple. He was a bodybuilder and he's like, refreshing at the end. It was really funny. So she read like, she sifted through 2,000 letters a week.
Dang.
I know. And she ended up between 1983 and 1995 appearing in 37 commercials for Snapple. Snapple sales through that time jumped from $232 million in 92 to $774 million in 1994. Mostly, they say, attributed to the fact that Snapple Lady was so popular. It ended up on Seinfeld. Howard Stern was a representative for the brand. And then they kind of linked up with a new... They went with Quaker Oats as, like, a new conglomerate. Like, they merged with Quaker Oats. They bought them. And the PR strategist there, like, had them veer away from just doing the regular glass bottles. And Howard Stern was, like, slighted. He wasn't included anymore. He started calling it Crapple. And that really took off. And so Snapple took, like, a deep nosedive into, like, 1998 when they decided to get Wendy back on board. She got her own signature flavor. It like,
what was her flavor?
It was called, I don't remember. It was like Wendy's Hawaiian tropical. It was like some kind of tropical punch. I have it in here somewhere.
Man, this is like the height of Howard Stern's power when he could destroy a large company.
Exactly. So yeah. And then they ended up selling to like Dr. Pepper, Cadbury, whatever that conglomerate is.
Coca-Cola, aren't they?
I think it says as a part of the Dr. Pepper Snapple group.
Huh. Okay. Yeah. I guess not then.
So anyway, they sold for $18.7 billion. Isn't that crazy?
No. How much did the Snapple lady get of
that? I think I looked up her net worth. She's only worth $500,000.
Hmm.
So there was also rumor for a long time because there was a K that appeared on the bottle that they were affiliated with the Ku Klux Klan.
I do remember that rumor.
It's just because they were kosher. So, yeah. Anyway, they had to take out ads in, like, the newspaper to say, like, that they weren't affiliated with the KKK.
Wow, that's
the story
ridiculous.
Of Snapple. Did you have a favorite Snapple flavor?
I feel like I wasn't really into Snapple. I was into more other fruit juice things back then. But we were talking about this a while ago, and I remember that there was like a commercial contest.
Yeah.
Where they were like, people can submit their contests, or they can submit their commercial ideas, and then if you win, they'll make the commercial, and you get to be in the commercial.
Oh, that's awesome.
And this commercial was, like, this kid's idea, I'm pretty sure it was like a young person, but I don't remember.
Yeah.
Is they're all in class, maybe at detention, I can't really remember, and they all have Snapple lids on their desks, and they're all communicating via Morse code by snapping the lid.
Oh, the little poppy lid.
Yeah, and I can't really remember much more of it than that, but yeah. I always remembered that commercial because I thought it was so clever, and yeah. I also thought it was cool that, like, a regular person got to make, like, an actual TV commercial.
Totally. Well, I think, like, their marketing strategy and Snapple in general really played into the whole kind of... I feel like the 90s are divided into two sections, right? Like, the way I think about it, at least. I think of, like, 1990 to 1995 and, like, the grungy
right.
90s and, like, early hip-hop and all that stuff and, like, Blossom and then, like...
right.
And then, like, the late 90s, like, 95 to 2000 being, like, Britney Spears. And, like, it was funny because today I wanted to listen to 90s music. And so I put on 90s playlist and was like, Britney Spears, Backstreet Boys. I'm like, yes, that is 90s. But, like, that's not really necessarily what I think of when I think of 90s.
Right.
I think of, like, Bush, which is kind of, like, right there in the middle, though.
It just depends on how old you are, I think.
Yeah.
Also. Like, 90s is, like, when pop music sort of, like, came back.
Yeah,
I mean, not
true.
That it ever went away, but, like,
it's true.
Sort of had a resurgence.
Chef recommends, if you were going to throw, like, a 90s kind of, like, party at your house, what would be the essentials?
Definitely bagel bites.
Oh, yes.
Obviously. I think I'm not, so it's hard to figure this out. I think that pizza rolls are the 80s, but it's possible that pizza rolls are the 90s.
They were invented in the 70s. I did the story of Tortino's pizza rolls, and they were invented in the 70s, but they were definitely super popular
in the
90s. A lot
of people kept bringing them up alongside bagel bites in, like, yeah. articles I was reading, and I'm like, I feel like, okay, so no, I guess they can't be there if it's okay. a purist.
Sure, sure.
But love you, pizza rolls. I would probably also have, like, Pizza Hut there. I mean, I feel like,
hell
of course
yeah.
Pizza Hut had existed before the 90s, but that's when I got really into pizza and was also 100. Working at Pizza
oh,
Hut.
Oh, you worked at a Pizza Hut?
Yeah, that was my high school job and part of college.
Yo, dude, my, like, strongest, like, memories and nostalgia of spending time with my dad as a kid right when my parents got divorced was, like, chilling with my dad while he drank a pitcher, full pitcher of beer,
yep.
smoked cigarettes, and we ate, like, green pepper and pepperoni pizza in a Pizza Hut with those, like, red plastic cups mm-hmm. and the, like, what do you call it? Like, a stained glass kind of lamp vibes.
Yeah. Yeah, which are, you know, yeah. very beautiful.
Yeah, gorgeous. I would, honestly, if there were a Pizza Hut that we could go to right now that still had that vibe, I would go all the time.
They are around, but just not in the city.
Really? We got to go out of state.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, out of the city proper. There's probably, like, in New Jersey.
Sure, sure.
Surely.
Please, write to lifesabanquetshow@gmail.com and let us know where the chillest Pizza Hut is in America. We'll go there.
We will. And then I guess probably I was also a really big fan of Fruit by the Foot, even though I was a little bit too old for that.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to think. So, and I loved Handy Snacks. So, like,
yeah,
you get, like, and Lunchables, but I would always get the Lunchable and not eat any of the meat discs.
Oh,
I would
uh-huh.
just eat the cheese and crackers.
What'd you do with the meat?
Just leave it in there.
Toss it out.
It was, like,
give it to
thick.
A friend.
I think I would just throw it out.
It was
Sorry.
Thick.
Food waste was fine in the 90s.
No.
We were allowed to do it.
And it's fine. Yeah, I think I would just make, like, a really giant bowl of tricolor tortellini salad with, like, the kind of, like, black olives that you can put on your fingers.
Yeah, totally.
Which also, I think, like, eating black olives on your fingers is also a 90s mm-hmm. food trend.
Yeah, totally.
What are your top three favorite foods from the 90s?
Okay, so also, I'm sorry to say, Pizza Hut. Just,
sure.
It was so good. Also,
so good.
There was a pizza buffet thing happening in the 90s,
uh-huh.
And especially at the Pizza Hut that I worked at. It may have happened before the 90s, but it was when I came to consciousness.
Sure. You, like, woke up in a Pizza Hut. You're like, what is this world?
So Pizza Hut pizza buffet.
Hi. Sorry, one of our buds is outside. Pizza Hut pizza buffet. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Focus, please. Handy Snacks.
So good.
Regular crackers or breadsticks.
Oh,
both
snap.
Are fine. No
yeah.
pretzels, though.
No pretzels.
And then I was talking to someone about this, and we weren't sure, but are combos 90s?
Dude, I forgot about combos. And you know what's so funny? I was munching on some... Wouldn't you like to know? I was munching on some peanut butter filled pretzels because I bought them for my trip.
Sure.
And I was like, God damn it, I love these. And I don't remember eating those as a kid, but I remember that feeling of a hollow pretzel with mm-hmm. mush inside. And it's because I used to Mao combos.
Yeah, but I would never get the pretzel combos.
Oh.
I would just get the plain
oh.
outside.
Do you have a problem with pretzels? Kind of, this is the second negative thing you've said about
pretzels.
I would
pretzels. Say I might not have a problem with pretzels, but we're not, like, besties. But
sure,
the funny
sure.
thing about regular
combos and handy snacks is just like the same thing in a different delivery. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just like cheese and crackers.
Yeah, exactly. Which is just... it's just a different, you're absolutely right. So my three favorite things from the 1990s, I'm going to have to say I really liked what was the oat brand? I want to say it's Crackling Oat Bran. It was like oat cereal that it was like hard, crunchy, very sweet.
So crunchy.
Ugh. I loved it.
It is Crackling Oat Bran.
Yeah. And maybe that's not 90s, but it was something that was very popular to me in the 90s.
It was like O's and they had like weird little studded things on it.
Ugh, exactly.
Gross.
Loved it. loved 3D Doritos.
Oh, right. I forgot about those. Yeah. Those were a mysterious, like, why did those exist?
Yeah. Bizarre.
They were delicious.
Yes. And I guess probably when they made the jelly and peanut butter that came in the same jar.
You loved Uncrustables.
Well, I loved Uncrustables, but I loved
the combination peanut butter and jelly.
Exactly. In the same jar. It made it so much easier. And then you could just take a spoon right in there and eat it out. I want to just remind all our listeners who probably already know this about me, is that I ate like shit junk food when I was a kid. Like both my parents are chefs, and also I was a complete latchkey kid and really nobody gave a shit about me. So my parents were going through a divorce and my mom, bless her heart, didn't really want to like deal with any more stress. So we'd go to the supermarket and she'd be like, get whatever you want. And I got the crappiest of all junk food available.
Because the 90s was the height of kid junk food.
It really was.
You were really living the dream.
I'm going to say something right now. Two words. Trix yogurt.
Trix yogurt. I was too old for that.
Oh.
I know it exists.
Yeah.
It's shockingly brightly colored. I saw a picture of it when I was doing my research.
Yes. I'm going to say something else. 1-2-3 Jell-O.
That
triple layer Jell-O.
That's 80s.
I made it in the 90s.
I actually tried to like find it and then see if people had like tried to recreate it, but it's one of those things that people were just like don't care about. But it was like had the creamy layer.
Yeah, it's highly toxic.
It is?
It has to be.
No.
How did it just form like that?
It didn't. You had to layer it a little bit.
Oh, I thought
but also like the creamy layer sank to the bottom because it's heavier because it had like the milk solid in it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Flintstones Push Pops.
I don't think I know what that is.
It was like a weird kind of sherbet pop.
The orange sherbet ones.
And you shove it up. And Flintstones vitamins.
Do you remember those?
Mm-hmm.
I think I definitely took those.
Yeah. There was a lot of...
sugary.
Very sugary. Very sugary.
Yeah.
Well, the 1990s were a hell of a time to be alive. Do you have a favorite song that sticks out that you want to mention?
I was forming in the 90s, so it's really hard for me to pick one song. Mm-hmm. I do remember when I was starting to figure out what grunge was, and like, lived in Indiana, and there was no internet back then, and my school was small, and I basically heard the Cranberries' Zombie.
Oh, yeah.
And I would just like run around the house singing it, and my sister was like, what is this song? Stop singing it. She's like, this is not a real song. And I'm like, no, it is. We had to like wait for it to come on the radio, though, because like there was no other way to hear it.
Totally.
So I think my memory of the 90s and music is like waiting to hear something come on the radio.
Totally.
Or taping songs overnight while I was asleep in the hopes that the hit song that I loved would come on the radio.
Absolutely. Yeah. In the late 90s, I used to do that with like the CM Famalam Stretch and Bobbito show.
Yeah.
Stay up all night and tape it. The song that really sticks out for me from the 90s is Glycerin.
Right, you mentioned Bush earlier.
Oh my god, dude. Well, I love Bush.
You do?
No!
I mean, 90s Bush is cool.
Just the one song.
Gavin Rossdale is hot.
Yeah, he was a sexy vibe. Mm-hmm. But now, who knows?
Also, what a lot of people don't know about Gavin Rossdale is that he's a very good tennis player.
Oh! Oh, I think we should end on that note. We can't possibly get any higher than that. This was a really fun show. I'm wearing only one shoe because I'm wearing new shoes and I have a cut on my toe.
Gross.
Just thank you for putting up with me in that. That was very kind. You're a good friend.
Thank you for saying that.
And it was so fun to be back. And I'm very excited to see you again very, very soon.
Great.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. Hasta la pasta. Hasta la pasta. Life's Banquet is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org, or connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, and more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click at the heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.